That's good. Where's mine? There. Is it? That's great. Thank you. Well, cheers.
Cheers, my dears.
Slange.
As I said earlier, health and happiness.
Health and happiness.
Yeah. The rest's a bonus.
Mm. And I know Louise is from here because I grew up with Louise, but I mean, are you also from here?
Louise is here.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
You were gesturing towards our.
I just gestured at random.
Louise is from here. God, I've had a lot to drink.
Did you grow up near as well?
Oh, very much so.
Mm.
I was born in. My sister was born in South Lodge.
Mm-hmm.
I was at Invercar,
mm-hmm.
which I think is just off. Invercar was just off Castle Hill Road. My parents stayed and we stayed all our days down in Windsor Place,
okay.
just by the old fort.
Yeah.
And never moved from there. So we can create a half mile radius,
mm-hmm.
and that's us.
Mm-hmm. And have you lived outside Ayrshire?
No.
No.
Other than Jordan Hill.
Other than Jordan Hill. And that was for what, teacher training?
Yeah. Well, PE.
PE, yeah.
3 years, Jordan Hill.
And did you actually live in Glasgow at the time?
Monday to Friday, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So, well, there's some of it. A couple of photographs. There's another five or six of them that are just a copies of that, Ayr Harbour.
All right.
How many did you have of each? There was how many harbour ones and how many country scenes or something?
It was about four or five of each of just the better ones. But they're all just sitting. They don't actually belong there.
Mm-hmm.
That was just to shove them up because Louise is doing a modification.
Oh, my God.
Some other stuff.
The painted frames.
But as that went up there above the door is more important to me.
What's that?
That's the Boisoline picture of Stevie.
Steve Hislop, British superbike motorcycle champion this year.
All right.
And that's... it was down... North Harbour Motorcycles,
uh-huh.
and that's his wee hizzy helmet. He's got the wee dervish Scottish psycho kind of. It's almost like the Tasmanian devil,
uh-huh.
but in a kilt, and that's Stevie's helmet. And he won the British Superbike Championship this year. He was second the year before,
right?
And he signed that for me, so that's up there. And just before we start.
Yeah, what's the
Kolkata cup? I have a look at that cup and tell me what it is.
Well, I know it's the Kolkata cup.
Because I squealed on you.
I squealed. I didn't hear the story, so why are you drinking the Kolkata cup?
Murrayfield, a couple of years ago, when we last beat the English and got the cup. And Davy Good's boy, they organised a presentation dinner
uh-huh.
for personalities and players of the year. And Davy's boy was Premiership 2 Players Player of the Year.
Mm-hmm.
So there was about 12 of us went through from Ayr. And you had an invite to go through.
Mm-hmm, but it was a bus and I get transferred.
A minibus. So. And didn't want to go through. And it turned out, the bottom line originally was that it was like 30, 40 quid a head at mm-hmm. Murrayfield.
Mm-hmm.
And the coach at the time, Rab Dale, said, right, I don't get paid as the coach, I'm an amateur coach, so as representative of the club, we're going to go through, we're going to take a table, and that's my fee for the year.
Right.
And as far as the bus was concerned, we would share the cost of the bus, but then he went back to them afterwards and said, hell bloody mend you.
Hmm.
So it actually turned out that the whole night... ended up free. I was quite prepared to pay my 25-30 quid
yeah.
to go through, but there was about 12 of us went through in the minibus. Louise, Rab said, does she want to go? And I asked her and she said, no, I can't travel in the minibus. But that was the very first. So it's a shame in a way you didn't go to it. And it was all the big personalities were there setting it up for the very first time. Mm. as the Rugby Sports Personality Dinner Award.
Right.
And because we had happened to beat the English.
They were just passing around the cup.
And we had the cup. I filled with the famous grouse, our sponsors.
It was filled with whiskey?
Filled with whiskey.
So how much did you drink?
I got there a wee bit late. But the point was, seeing the table.
Aye.
The table was filled with cans of the sponsors' beer, because obviously these brewers, distillers are all part of conglomerates.
Aye.
So there was so much on the table. Miniatures of whiskey, wine, all the rest of it. It was all sitting there absolutely bunchy. And the cup was absolutely, totally filled to the brim with the famous grouse. And people were just told, there it is, there's the cup, and there's a couple of security guards standing.
Huh.
You know, sort of, what do you call them, first past the post, these people you see. And it was a matter of, just go up and help yourself. And it was so relaxed. It wasn't that kind of, oh, you got your 2 megaseconds. People went up when they felt like it. They got the cup, yeah. And just took a slug of it. So, you know, I get that. Yeah.
And the photo's been, what was it, computer?
On the computer.
Edited somewhat, because there was some quite horrified looking people in the background. Oh, there were
two or three frumpies in the background. So I took my photograph up to the school, went to the art department, scanned it down into the art department computer, and then pigtailed out.
The badass.
You know, and left. I don't know who the guy is in the background, but it needed a wee bit. Where the pillar is that I'm standing in front of were two frumpy ladies.
Like with a grumpy expression.
Yeah, so get rid of them. But there's another picture of me and Davey, and we're holding it between us.
Mm-hmm.
And that one used to be done someday as well.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm lucky, you know, to drink out the Calcutta cup.
Oh,
yeah, that's cool. So that and Stevie. Stevie broke his neck 3 years ago.
Did he? I mean, I don't follow Superbike.
He had a topside and did a cartwheel and broke his neck, and then come back a year later and ended up second in the British Superbikes, and then this year won it.
Because you're into bikes as well.
Oh, aye. And he's... he's, what, 40 this year. And you know what happened for winning it? His team sacked him. He's too old.
You're joking.
So he was on Ducatis this year for Monster Mob. And it's terrible. I've got a Monster Mob, you know, baseball cap signed by him.
Uh-huh.
And he's now going over to Yamaha for what might be his last season ever. He's won something like 8 Isle of Man TTs.
Yeah.
And he's a nice guy. He really is. See the Formula One guys, they're so precious, and they've got their jail around them. Nobody gets near them.
Mm-hmm.
The motorcycle boys, you can go up and chinwag with them.
Mm-hmm.
You can talk away.
I mean, I know nothing about Stevie Hislop. Is he local?
Not Dumfries,
Dalbeattie,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where did that come from? I must have retained that from one of your diatribes before.
Aye. But they're great guys. As I say, it's had a broken neck, and they live right at the edge of life.
Yeah.
And yet, if you want to have a wee blether with them,
mm-hmm.
they'll chin my way. Mm-hmm. I've got Jim Moody's photograph upstairs and autograph in a book. And Jim Moody won the Isle of Man TT about 6 times, and won a Norrie Limburn's Riders, and again another superb guy. Ian Simpson, another guy whose autograph I've got, met at Rugby Club, again one of Norrie's boys, and he shattered a leg about 6 years ago. Made a comeback, and he won the Isle of Man Senior TT on Honda's 50th anniversary for Honda.
Mm.
And he was God for Honda. Mm. The next year, he had about 2 races, he broke his leg again. And remember, we were at the club, and I was asking about him. And again, a lovely guy, and Ian Simpson. Jim Moody's a Glasgow guy. Ian Simpson's from about Dalbeattie way as well. And fractured bone fragments get into his blood system. And remember he said, I mean, it was terrible. He was on traction with a shattered, the second time the leg had been shattered. And it was about a fortnight before they could operate on it to try and recover the leg. And it was touch and go whether it would be amputated. And also, they were shitting themselves. The debris would travel up in his blood system and cause a major blockage and kill him. And he came through that and managed to live through it. And mind you, I've never heard from Norrie what he's doing now. Yeah. But I think Honda gave him a big payoff.
Yeah.
A lot of money.
Yeah.
But, I mean, what these guys do.
Yeah. Have you ever raced yourself, or was you just interested in the bikes?
I just riding a bike, and I love it and I scare myself at the same time.
And what's the different bikes you've got again? I can't even remember what they were.
I've got... I started off about 15 years ago, my mate Peter and I got back into classic old bikes. And he arrived at the door with a Tiger Cub from about 1963. And I went, yeah, bugger, we've talked about this for so long. And I knew that a neighbour out in Prestwick had a 500cc BSA. And I went back and he still had it. And I bought it off him and restored it.
When was this?
12, 13 years ago. And we set up the Air Classic Motorcycle Club. And then we started the Air Classic, the Scottish Classic Bike Show. And it still goes on. And I organised it. I was organising secretary for about 6 years. And we had probably about 120 or so entrants who came from as far afield as Middle Ireland, Middle England, right up to Aberdeen, and we had it in Dam Park Hall. And it was a great show. It was really, really good. Great fun. And being there at the start and organising and setting up, excellent. And I bought two or three more bikes. Peter did the same. And I ended up with five classic bikes. I had a 1952 Matchless. I had a 1950 BSA, which was the first one. I had a 1959 Triumph T21, 350s twin. I had a 1968 Triumph Tiger 100 SS 500 twin. I had a 1978 Triumph Bonneville 750. And Peter had a mass of bikes as well. Then he for various reasons, the marriage split, divorce, went down to he got rid of some stuff and all the rest of it. And to cut to the chase, now I sold off some stuff. And what I have now is, I've still got the old BSA, the 58 BSA. I've got the 67-68 Triumph Tiger 100. And I've still got the Bonneville. And I sold the T21 and the Matchless, which was a rust bucket needing restored, and I bought a Honda Deauville.
It's like driving around in an armchair. It's
like a Rolls Royce, but the poor man's Rolls Royce. It's a 650 V-twin, shaft drive, electric start.
You're talking in tongues now.
Yeah, gorgeous.
I'm impressed with
it. It's red and shiny.
Put it like this, at the start of the summer holidays last year, I went through to Knock Hill on the Friday afternoon. I got there, spent an hour and a half there, I got back in the bike. I was at South Queen's Ferry, and an hour and 20 minutes later, I was back in there. I parked the bike, got my football kit, went out to the old Racecourse Hotel, and the staff punters football match was on, and I played half an hour.
And then, and then you fell down.
And then we had a barbecue. So, now, on the Bonneville, I could never have done that.
Mm.
The Bonneville was the first one I ever went out on.
It's a lovely bike, and the sound.
Oh, it's,
kind of, sound
oh, it's like a roar. Because yeah. I'd never been on a motorbike before, and I was absolutely terrified at the thought of it. And, you know, was determined I was going to get over this fear. And he said, oh, I'll just take you around the block. And the block ended up being, you know, a 10-mile stretch. But it was once I got on the thing, I couldn't believe it. It was, like, a fantastic feeling.
Uh-huh.
The problem is the Bonneville's very bumpy. So it rattles all up your spine and everything. But the Deauville, the pillion passenger, sits above the driver and you get an awful lot of backdraft.
Right.
So if you've actually got, at the time I had quite a bad neck, it really...
And you remember we hit that those, big
bump,
race course.
The bump that does readjust your spinal column bump. Because you go over it and it...
But you used to go up to Knock Hill.
Oh, aye. Yeah.
And would you drive around the circuit then?
No.
I'm too old for that. No.
It's just...
But John and I... My two outings a year, my main outings are, though I'd love to go abroad, is over to the northwest at Portrush.
Mm-hmm.
And what they have there is like a 10-mile triangular circuit between Portrush, Port Stewart and Port... And... Portrush, Port Stewart and...
Carrickfairs.
Anyway, it's a triangular route,
mm-hmm.
and they can go up to, the racers go up to about 170 mile an hour on the straights.
And it's just normal roads that are kind of abandoned.
And, yeah,
right.
And they shut the roads for the day. And, oh, what was that like?
He phoned me, Louise.
We
listen
had,
to this.
What we did. What we did was, this year, we got there, and within that big triangle, there's little country lanes. And we were told by one of the old stewards, take your bike in there and move about in the course of the day in your bike and get to different points in the circuit. And so we thought, we'll do it this year. And it was a drizzly, yucky day. But anyway, we went in and we set the bike down and went on to the coast area, which is the top of the triangle, the top flat. And I say there's Portrush, Port Stewart, and then Coleraine. Down here, the bottom of the triangle. And these guys were going to... And they've got a helicopter which goes around filming because... And they've got film crews all around because this is crazy. I could show you 2 years ago the video footage and this is scary stuff. It's 170 mile an hour on basically the road to Minishant.
Yeah,
except it's no as straight as that. And you know they're doing all this stuff and we're moving around within this and coming out in the afternoon it dried out a bit and we had gone up the road and we had across the road at the outskirts of Port Stewart there's a wee mini market and we went across and we got some beers to take back to our hotel and a couple of bits and pieces so we thought we haven't had any to drink, we've got bikes in here, we will have a can of beer. So we're behind this, look upon it like this, I am standing here leaning on the fence post of a field.
Uh-huh.
And here the pavement starts.
Uh-huh.
And where the end of the room is,
uh-huh.
is where the pavement stops. And beyond that are the motorbikes. And they're coming up and they've come up, uphill, round a wee chicane of a roundabout and they're accelerating and they're going by us about 130 miles an hour, which is where the fire is.
Oh. Did you go deaf?
Oh, it was incredibly loud.
The helicopters are going around filming for the video of the Northwest for the year. And so it's like a finger pointing from the sky in the triangle. You know where the leading riders are as it's going round. So you're waiting for them coming. So I dialed up in the mobile and I got Louise in the mobile and I'm saying, it's great, the sun's just come out, it's nice and dry, it's absolutely lovely. And by the way, the bikes are just coming by. Hang on a minute and you'll get an idea of why I'm here. And I reached out over the fence, which was to about here, and therefore we're only 6 or 7 feet away from the bikes going by.
And jumped out my skin.
As these things, they're accelerating up that hill, and they're going by us about 130 miles an hour, and as they're going along the straight before the next bend, they're up to about 160. And it's just the afterheads there. Is that an Ayrshire expression?
That is an Ayrshire expression.
They are totally afterheads. They are guys who have lost the plot. And the number of people who get killed, it's amazing.
Yeah. Probably passers-by at that speed as well.
Where we were when I put the phone out for Louise, it runs down and then there's a wee kick that way.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a road come out and we were standing there and watching these bikes coming down and go around. And you thought it was pretty straight.
Mm-hmm.
But when we were up there, it was a big bend. You know, they just went round it. And there were a couple of guys standing there and said, "You should have been here 7 years ago." What happened was a guy came down and there's a curb on the far side and they're trying to get as close to it as they can.
Mm-hmm.
To shallow out the corner, and he got in so tight the wheel kicked up onto the curbing.
Oh my god.
And what happened was this: as he came round and the wheel went onto the curbing, he came out of the saddle and he lost his grip with his right hand, and he was holding on to the handlebar with his left, and he did Superman and he went along. And
no.
The wheel ran along the curb and the bike was at like 45 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like this. And he's doing about 140 miles an hour.
Okay. You believe and, a man can fly.
And what happened was the bike came down off it and got vertical again and jumped him up. And he ended up back in the saddle of the bike.
Oh, that's got to be
and
a
he
legend.
Caught on again.
The legend of the flying
and lived and went on. And that's seemingly what was happening.
Oh, yeah, it was a couple of old Irish guys telling you
poems. No, they named the guy and they said,
oh,
you just, you honestly wouldn't have believed that.
Who's now dead, so cannot be
around
it.
Now,
but are you saying this happened more than once, or was this one guy?
Oh, no, this was just this one guy, and this again, Jim Moody. Again, see the guy, I've got his pictures and autographs upstairs. Jim, last year, was riding round and he came off at a roundabout somewhere out in the course and he was in second place at the time. And they've got a tannoy all the way round giving you an update on what's going on. And all we heard was this patter, right, so-and-so, Jim Moody is not up there in the front. What's happened to him, we don't know, we'll let you know. And he's come off at such and such roundabout. Right, we'll let you know what's happened. And a couple of minutes later it was, he's okay. What's happened is he just topsided, but very gently. And he came off and he's now sitting with the spectators. And one of them's loaned him his mobile phone. He's phoned his wife back in the pits to say he's okay. And someone else has given him a cigarette. That's not Grand Prix.
No, it's not.
Yeah, but that was the patter. Jim's okay. He's a spectator's given him the mobile to let the wife know he's okay. And someone else has given him a fag. So forget it. And that is still racing at the cutting edge. That's amazing.
But I mean, one of the things you often see is when the guys come back, because they quite often now get the ferry to Troon, and it's when the door opens in the ferry, and there's just like, whoa, Hell's Angels appear.
150 bikes down in the shell, a metal shell, of the car deck, and everybody opens up. Everybody starts up their bikes.
And people at the back.
And every year, there's all these people are lined up on the, you know, the jetty to see all these bikes coming off. And really, I'll tell you, a buzz.
Yeah.
I mean, my bike is a wuss. It's getting no. It's just a shaft drive cruising bike. The Bonnie was good.
Oh, it was good.
It ripped it, and it's like the Ducatis. But last year when I went over in the Dovio, oh, and by the way, terrible. When we landed in Dublin, Belfast.
Docked.
In Belfast.
You landed? Did you fly?
We landed in the ferry on the quay. That's landing. We landed with the bikes, and you've got a high ramp at Troon. It's low stuff.
Uh-huh.
At Belfast, you've got to climb up and out.
Right.
I stalled on the way
down. But you look like a real fart.
I'm going to like... stall halfway up the because what's happening is you've got about five rows of bikers coming, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and everybody's trying to get their wee space to go up, and you're feathering the clutch and that, you know, and then I got my turn, and as I started to open, I went donk. There's 100 bikers behind me, and guess what they're saying? Stupid old bastard should not be biking at his age. And luckily,
menopausal man.
And I'm on a slope and a ramp like that. I don't want to start roll back.
Oh God! No.
Don't want to start. Credibility is like, you know.
But that was. I mean, what about that other time? The old bridge incident.
Here's another one. In the Bonneville.
This is why when you get to be another 10 or 12 years older, John, do not get a desire for a motorbike.
Bikes are off a heavy. The Dovio is 220 kilos.
I don't know what that
dead
means
weight.
In pounds. What does that mean in pounds?
Can I swear? Fucking heavy.
Right, okay. For a wee fella like yourself.
220 kilos is about 450 pounds.
Oh, that's heavy.
So, when you're moving, no problem.
Mm-hmm.
When you're trying to put it up in a stand, down off a stand, move away slowly.
It's too big for you.
They're all too big for me. And then I die. Then I die. I don't care. I don't care. They can all be too big for me.
You need a wee bike.
No, I die, exactly. A moped. So, anyway. What was the story? The bridge.
Bridge incident.
The Bonneville is only maybe about 30 or 40 pounds lighter. So I've been out with John. We've gone a run away up round Straighton, Nick of the Ballach, down towards Bar. Uh-huh. And when you get into Bar, you've got the wee road along the burn, and then you've got a wee humpback bridge over the burn to carry on towards Girvan. So we're riding along, very cool dude, cruising along. He's got his BMW. He does a lot of all-year miles, I don't. So he's very relaxed in his bike. We're travelling along beside the burn before making a left over the humpback bridge. I notice Liz, her husband, sitting at a picnic bench in the middle of the village beside the burn. And their kids are obviously playing about in the burn. Middle of summer. So we're going by and I go, hey, there. So I go toot toot on my horn, wave, and we then go onto the humpback bridge. So I give another wave as I'm going over the bridge. John's gone ahead of me and I've slowed down because I'm thinking, might go back and have a wee hello.
Mm-hmm.
Talk to him. Now I'm up there and I'm just on the top. And I wave, and I'm down to no revs. The bike stalls. So you think the bridge parapet, you okay with that? Is that high? I'm there on the bike. I am waving like this with one hand still on the throttle. Really low revs going over the hump. I open the throttle again, and the bike dies on me.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Suddenly I'm going this way. The parapet is there, I'm waving to my friends, I disappear. Below the parapet.
Not exactly Mr. Coolin, have I?
Oh, no.
I don't know.
I did the same last year. Now, the Deauville, lovely bike. And we had gone from Keswick onto the motorway, down about 30 miles in atrocious weather. Pissing rain, gale force wind. This is not biking that I want to do. And then we take a left, because we're going down south, into North Yorkshire. And we then have a lovely afternoon. The rain stops, still cloudy, but we're on beautiful roads, and we go all over the place. And we get up this valley, and at one point, Peter's ahead of me. He's got a VFR Honda, which is like a sports roadster. And it can do about 150 miles an hour. My machine can only do about 120.
Well, and you should be doing that anyway.
No, we don't do that. Peter never gets near that either. But it's the VFR I've been on it. Lovely bike. But you're like a jockey on it. And that's no use for me with my back. I want to be
a
bit more relaxed in the armchair. So we're going along. And at one point, you know, I'm signaled back and forth. And he's in front of me. And I see him, his legs coming up and that, and I go, well, you do that, see, when you're on the bike for a while, you don't know this,
I do.
You actually,
she's the biker in the
right,
family.
You'll shake legs, you know, that kind of stuff. And so Peter does this, and I'm going, oh, why? Then the next thing, I'm up out the saddle. There was a wee hump on the road, and I'm up out the thing, and his lighter bike went right up so high that it increased revs. You know, the revs increased because the total bike was off the deck. All that happened with me was I come up off my bike because it's a heavier bike. And I started laughing in my helmet. It was because I didn't realise it was like being in a roller coaster and not expecting it. And I was right out of the saddle and I was only holding on. And okay, so we're going round like this. And it was absolutely tremendous doing this run. Well, we came back through very rainy weather again into the Lake District. And I went round the side of this lake. And the lake's down here, the hillside's coming down, a lot of water on the road. And Peter said, you go ahead. And I'm going back, forwards, up, down, roundabout. And I'm going, I'm not used to wet roads. And in actual fact, I've never done this before. I went over at one point on a bend in wet, and I scuffed the outside of my boot as I went over. I'm too old for that. I'm not interested in that. And we had a great time. 150-mile run. Came back into Keswick. Outskirts of Keswick, petrol station, filled up, 100 yards down the road, turned off the main road left, and our bed and breakfast hotel was in the wee back street. And what we had to do was, we went along this first back street and came to a crossroads, and our hotel was up on the right. So Peter's in front of me, and we're just chug, 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 full tank of petrol, end of the day, psycho stuff. I've been out of the saddle, I have scuffed my boots, I've had been in rain, heavy winds, all the rest of it, and we're back in this lovely calm. And in the garage when we topped up, there was this big Harley club. There was about 30 bikes or so, and they said they'd gone further north than us, and it had just rained solid, been total crap, and we went, we've been lucky, we've been in the right place. So Peter comes to this junction, does a look right, left, nothing around, cars parked everywhere in the wee back street, makes the right turn. Behind him, stands up in the foot pegs to look over the parked cars, stands up like this, you know, so I'm up there and I'm going, nothing, nothing, nothing. Turn, open the throttle, and the bike stalls. chug, 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 dunk. And I'm up here.
What, on your tiptoes on the pedal?
And for a moment, I'm standing on the foot pegs. And I go... and I put my foot down. Now, there's that between the ground and the foot peg. So I'm waiting to hit the ground. And I do. And I've got, you know, 200 kilos of bike plus a full load of petrol. Because I've just filled
plus
up.
Plus yourself.
And my leg's going... no! And I just keep going, going, going. And down I went, clunk. And there's a lassie walking
along. It doesn't learn.
There's a lassie walking along the road, one of the locals, and I'm down, dog. Hello, dear, how are you? And she said, are you all right? Yes, I'm all right. And so I get to the bike, and it's now totally full of petrol, and the breather, the wee breather tube is leaking petrol because it's got 4.5, 5 gallons of petrol in the tank. Mm. And of course, you're just seeing this swim of petrol over the road. And I'm like, oh, no, 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 no. And so I'm trying to lift the bike up and I can't. It's just too bloody heavy. Mm. And this girl's going, are you sure you're all right? And I'm going, oh. Fuck off, and help me lift the bike up. But luckily, Peter had happened just to kind of, okay. I don't know, he just kind of looked back in his mirror and he saw me again down. So he came back and the two of us, now there must have been maybe no more than a quarter of a pint of petrol come out of the bike. And the bike has plastic outriggers, and behind outriggers are like inch steel rods that they come out like that and then loop back. So it's just like a couple of flippers. And the bike just went dunk and sat. And the only damage is a couple of scrapes and these plastic outriggers, which cost about 12 quid. And it's okay, I'll maybe renew it eventually, but oh, embarrassment.
But you do that on a regular basis.
Priceless.
Priceless.
Yes.
Embarrassment is priceless. You do that on you go out there and you wonder why I'm kind of nervous about coming out. You can't even lift the blooming thing up.
The only... I have... Right, hold on, I'll tell you. I have had...
No, don't touch wood. Don't tell me about anything to do with that.
No.
That's bad karma.
One in Ireland. Again, it was from a standing stop.
So what
trying
I
to make a turn on a bad bit of road. And I was from stationary, going to move away, and there was a car coming, and I stopped, and I put my foot down, there's a bloody pothole.
Right, okay.
Right? No miles an hour. That's the one. There was another one at Kilkerran, that's two. And again, that was an upslope.
Right.
On a wee quiet country road, trying to make a right turn. Right. And the third time is the one I'm telling you about.
Right.
And that's a bit... of the modern bikes, the last 5 years, and that's, in 5 years, that's three times, it's all been from stationary.
Right, okay, sir.
Totally stationary. There is absolutely no problem when moving. It's
apart
just as...
So the trick is... scuffing of the boat.
Why, that was seriously, that was... Aye, that was great biking, though. That was... I went, ooh,
does, like, this kind of... mental motorcycle and stuff, and then he does speed, and then he does skiing, because you do all this demented skiing stuff as well. It's quite
scary
as well.
You're an extreme sportsman.
Yeah, I'm just past my sell-by day. Yeah, I like the notion of the thing I like about skiing is normally if I'm going to have a tomba, that's an expression we use.
A tomba.
Which means?
A tumble.
Well, you don't know about tomba. He was the French ski champion.
Okay.
Except we call a tomba. It's a fodun.
Oh, a fodun.
It's just, okay, it's just silly stuff. But if I have a tomba, it's because I'm responsible for me. Whereas in the bike, there are other circumstances that could prevail, which is other people. I don't have a problem with me and my bike. I'm always looking to cars and other stuff around me. Whereas normally in the ski slope, it's me being psycho, and if I have a fall, it's me to blame. So it's easier. Skiing's easier. But I love it.
What day should you start skiing?
I was at Jordan Hill. I did 3 or 4 years. Then I gave it all up just for my rugby. And then I went back to it about, 10 years ago?
Did you start in Scotland? Or is it Ali Moore? Was it dry ski sloping or...?
No, we went to through Jordan Hill, we went to Aviemore in the second year, and some of the guys in their year hated it, and I loved it. And then I went to Glenmore Lodge as a teacher with kids from and carried it on, as I say, for 3 or 4 years, once I qualified, and then because of my rugby commitment, never went back to it. But skiing is, I could have been good. I could have been, I reckon a pretty good, reasonable, high-level Bayesian instructor. I made a bad choice, but it was a great choice. I've got a lot of friends through rugby.
You've got a lot of, joiners in the corners and
electricians. Contacts, friends. I've had some great social times through rugby, but I get so involved in my rugby that the skiing didn't have a place. I'd only come back to it really after I gave up rugby and marathon running and all that nonsense.
Yeah, you had marathon running as well?
Yeah.
You had the Glasgow Marathon?
Yeah. I've got the video if you want to watch
it. No, we don't want to watch it. I started to be so horrified, but I have watched a video of a marathon before and it's just smooth material.
Somewhere in the archive material I've got video from when they actually did the national television stuff. And there's me and Jimmy Savile running breast to breast.
That must be kind of, that was before Louis Theroux.
I hated Jimmy Savile because was it the second time I did it? Everybody shouting, come on Jimmy, and I'm going, fuck Jimmy, what about he'd a shout. Who gives a shit about Jimmy? I'm your local hero. And he used to have minders that actually picked up his water for him at the water stations. He never even actually had to deviate off his course to go and get his water bottle.
That's shocking.
Yeah.
I don't think the public knows that.
And then I have...
They do know.
I have in the video. I finished ahead of him, but the did media really? Boys, I don't know. Hey, give him his due at his age. He's done about 50 or 60 marathons. He'd done a hell of a lot of them. But we come into the final shoot and it was Scott's Porridge Oats were the big sponsors. So they suddenly pushed this porridge in front of Jimmy as he came in.
Oh no, right. So you don't want bad food.
There
porridge.
I am. And they pulled him through the other gate and he appeared in front of me. And somewhere around this house, there's a video, and there's behind Jimmy Savile, putting on a face like, Scott's fucking porridge at the end of that marathon. Who are you kidding? And there's this look in my face, totally aghast. And Jimmy's going, of course, because obviously he's getting back sheesh, going, yeah. And I'm going, fucking. So you've never seen that.
I haven't seen
no,
that.
No, it's there somewhere in the archives. Oh, Lord. And it's behind Jimmy Savile in the finish gate. And
this was shown on national television.
Yeah. Oh no, you don't.
And the thing is, Joe Public would just have thought that you were grimacing in the pain of having run 26 point whatever it is miles.
I was grimacing at the thought of trying to take a spoonful of Scots porridge to the end of one. The marathon running was probably the worst thing I did.
And does it not knock on your knees and your Achilles?
Spine.
Spine.
Did you ever hit the wall?
Why?
What was that like?
sir to bear. The energy goes, it really is.
So how did you keep on?
The worst thing that happened was the first year we did it, there was four of us. And I'm pissed off. And I'm going to have to get the photograph doctored because the guys are going...
I mean, reality doesn't change if you doctor the photograph.
No, I'll tell you what happened.
Oh, it does! Remember Hitler?
Aye.
No more frumpy ladies in the photograph doesn't mean no
this
more.
This is how bad I feel about this. We ran and we were the Marine Corps Fitness Club guys and they took us up. And nobody.
And liar club.
Nobody. Nobody had done marathons before other than international athletes. And this was the first Glasgow Marathon. And we went out and we did things like, well, let's go for a 6 mile run. What's a 6 mile run like? And we did it. And then we did a 10 mile. And then we did 15 mile. And then we did 18 mile. And eventually what we did was, we changed at the rugby club. You'll probably not know the area. We changed at the rugby club, ran out past Alloway Primary to the Maybole Road, ran up to Digital, along to Dalrymple, out the back road Dalrymple to the Straighton Road, up to Maybole, and then back in the Maybole High Road to the Rugby Club. And if we felt good, we didn't just go into the Rugby Club, we went along Long Hill to Dunfoot, and then along Greenfield, back to the Rugby Club. And one night, Peter and I did another lap round the Rugby Club grounds. Which was
take
a bit,
you weren't getting sick.
It was a bit. It was about 21 miles, right? So then the four of us went up to Glasgow to do the marathon, and we got to about 23 miles, and we were knackered, and we actually walked for about a quarter of a mile at one point, and then we come into the Glasgow Green area, and we ran up this long avenue. Came round a dog leg to the right, and then there was a long straight to the finish, and we jogged along that, and I said to the guys, this is me, this is what annoys me, I said to the guys, we started together, we'll finish together. And we had these, what we done was, John, the New Zealander, was a sub 4 minute miler, and there was an outfit that were putting kit out, and it was called Sub 4, meaning Sub 4
minute
mile. And what we'd done was we'd put our tops out, and it was Sub 4, and then in brackets, HRS.
Sub 4 hours, right.
God. So we're coming in just after 3.5 hours in our marathon, and we've all got these on. And we're jogging up together up this final 200 metres. And I had no idea, nobody else knew what the finish was, but you're standing there as a steward. And there's a finish gate to the right, there's a finish gate to the left. And as we come up to this, this lassie came towards us and split us up. And the three went that way, and I went that way.
Aww.
Now, we went through the gate. I mean, I just, you're knackered, you just, you've got no argument in you. You just, kind of, this lassie came towards me with Day-Glow kit and stuff on, and the guys went that way, and I went that way. And we finished, went through a twin gate, because it was a split gate, got our times on. See, the next year, second year, the magazine came out. And there were one or two wee articles, there were one or two black and white photographs. There was one colour photograph in the middle of that magazine. Three guys, sub 4 hours.
No sign of
no.
You're a saddle, so really.
You were following this Day-Glow lassie.
The three of them there. Sub 4 HRS.
Did you feel resentment? Really? Did you feel any resentment about this?
Yeah.
Is this something you've carried with you for a number of years?
Yeah. I have got to get.
Have you thought about counselling?
And I've got my photograph of Megan through the gate with the time above my head, same time, and the guys have got their photographs. And what Peter did was he got in touch with the magazine publishers, and he got the original photograph, not just the magazine photograph. He's got the original photograph, and there's Willie and Kenny and him, and I'm not there.
But you could be put in digitally.
Yes.
Well, that is really something.
History could be rewritten.
No, that is something.
But how would you nurse your wrath to keep it warm?
I don't care. I don't care. I don't care even with just a head and shoulders behind them. You know, I really should have been there. I was totally pissed off at that. That was, and to be in, they've got the commemorative programme from the next year.
Oh, right.
Your claim to fame was...
And it's the only colour photograph in that.
The Diggly Angel took you away
from that. In that magazine. And the effort and the energy that went into that. And that is the one...
Yeah.
One of two or three things in my life that I feel terrible at.
But when you
You've
hit
had
the,
a good
hit,
life there,
you,
if that's all.
But when you hit the wall, how do you get through that? Because if I was close to hitting the wall, I would sit down, I would stop.
Well, you've got to hit the wall, and then you'll find out what you're made of.
What is it, some kind of test of metal?
Your body turns to jelly, honestly.
Uh-huh. So it's like me having a palpitation attack?
It's when all the blood sugar goes, isn't it?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Aye.
Oh, God, I get that a lot, but I'm just kind of sitting around the house.
It's like sex the second time.
Can't be that good.
No, it's...
I'd be running marathons.
No, what I mean is, you may fancy your chances at trying a second, but the body is saying no chance.
I see.
If you can get the drift, it's like, you know... The mind says aye, but the body is saying no chance. It's and just trying to.
But you carry on.
Well, yeah, you do.
But I mean, at what point does that happen to you? Is it close to the end? Or?
Well, aye, about 22, 23 miles. I've worked it out. That seems to be the point that all normal energy readily. Accessible sugars just are lost.
But could you prevent hitting the wall by taking glucose tablets or something like that before that point if you were aware that you were getting to it?
You can try, but your metabolism might not accept.
Right, uh-huh.
Because your metabolism is taking on your kind of normal body reserves.
Uh-huh.
And even though you're shipping that stuff in, it might not have the ability, it doesn't normally
exactly.
have the ability to make
or
use
to
of it.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Because you've gotten to that stage of crazy total fatigue that it's just saying, I'm on A mode and you're trying to push in B.
I suppose it must be a point where you want, I mean, the difference between your spirit or your soul and the mechanical object
is,
you live in.
It must
be very apparent because it's just...
There's a lot of that in it. We went through what's the part where the history museum, what do you call him?
Kelvin Grove.
What do you call the guy that all the stuff...
Oh, Burrell.
Burrell. Right. You've got all these...
Pruch.
Aye, pruch them from all over the world. The road humps.
Oh,
they're mountains. Honestly. Anything that creates a problem about linear movement, even if it's every now and then, you've got to step a couple inches higher and it kicks in and it kills you. It really does. But you've got to have done it. I mean, I can't actually...
No, it's
it.
Difficult to... perceive of that degree of determination, I suppose, or...
That's what happened.
Especially for me, because I'm fundamentally lazy.
That's what actually happens. You get to a stage where your body says, the game's a bogey. Gee up.
Mm.
And the trouble is, there are tens of thousands of people lining the street.
Oh, pride.
Shouting, Jimmy, Jimmy.
So I don't
but that's a normal Glasgow chant to shout Jimmy, Jimmy. They could maybe have been cheering me on and you would never have known it.
What do you mean,
it's Jimmy? Hi Jimmy this and hi Jimmy
that. Oh, I've never heard. No.
Oh, you've not lived.
Oh,
There's shelter life there, it's true.
But honestly, that was amazing. To try and get the last couple of miles. Oh, and see, the first time you get into Glasgow Green, mm-hmm. you've got hundreds of folk lining it. And you go into the green, and there's the avenue, and there's a kick, a dog leg that way. You don't know there's another 400 yards to go.
Oh no, do you think you're near the end?
And everybody's there, and everybody's gathered round the entrance here. And you go, yes, yes, yes. And you go, and then you go, oh, fuck. We've got to go way down there. And that's when people died. Kenny, who ran more marathons than the rest of us, and got the fastest time of all, he got down to about 3 minutes, 8 minutes. Whereas we were all about, sorry, 3 hours, 8 minutes. Uh-huh. My fastest was 3:26. And...
for 26 miles?
Yeah. And
no wonder you're knackered.
Kenny did about 5, 6, 7 marathons, got down to that level. But seeing that one, he go for the line, he collapsed, and they put him in a wheelchair and put the wrap, you know, the sort of cling film wrap on him and wheeled him across. He was a total space pilot. He just totally lost.
Oh, dear.